Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Surviving the Shift, a show where spirituality meets practicality, with your host, Michelle Arbeau.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Surviving the Shift. I'm your host, Michelle Arbeau. Tonight, I have a very special guest on the air with us, Treva Etienne. Treva is an established stage, television, and film actor who was born in London, England. His U.S. filmography includes Pirates of the Caribbean, Bad Boys 2, Black Hawk Down, Eyes Wide Shut, and Terminator Salvation. His well-received role on the hit show 24 adds to his wealth of television credits, including Criminal Minds, Medium, Charmed, Angel, Threat Matrix, and the NBC series The Philanthropist. Although Treva has enjoyed much success in the material sense, he is very real, down-to-earth, and highly spiritual. Treva will be sharing his behind-the-scenes inner journey with us, and as well, he'll be sharing his spiritual views. Treva, I think, is a shining example of someone who is really centered in truth. So without further ado, I'd like to bring Treva on the show.
Wow.
Welcome, Treva.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Wow.
So, Treva, let's get right into the meat and potatoes of this, because I really think your story is exemplary. I think, you know, you're definitely not the typical Hollywood celebrity by any means. So I guess we'll get started by asking you this. What are your spiritual beliefs? How could you sum up for us what you believe in?
Well, I just think it's about being fair. I think if you're fair to yourself and you're fair to other people, then we should be in a more equally balanced place within ourselves. And if we're equally balanced within ourselves and we take that there's equal love and equal pain to everything that we do in life, and that suffering isn't a curse, it's as necessary as joy is, then whatever your religious belief, if you can find a balance of having that in your life, then I think you're winning.
Okay. Well, that sounds, you know.
Does that make sense? I mean, does that make
it does,
sense?
It does. I understand, yes.
You know, you're winning.
Yes,
you're not letting the suffering of the everyday interrupt what is naturally your happy destiny. Because
yes.
We're all going to get that. We're always going to introduce and attract that. So we either have to find a way to accept it as the balance of that when it's good and when it's bad. When we're in the bad, we're not letting it color everything that's good around us as well, the people, the love, the opportunities, that we can find a balance in both. So I think that's kind of where it's at, if that is, you know, clear.
Okay, yeah, I understand. I'm sure everyone does as well.
Okay, thank you, everyone. Thank you very much, everyone.
So the other part of your spirituality, though, so what you're saying is, really, I mean, you're real, you're down to earth, you just, you know, you're wanting to be real, you know, you're wanting to be, just live your true self, and that's how we attract love and abundance, really, right? Just being our authentic self, and so that's kind of your basis. But the other sides of your spirituality, you being drawn to the Native American culture, and I've noticed through some of your interviews you've done that you wear metaphysical stones and things like that. So can you tell us a little bit about those aspects of your spirituality?
Well, they've kind of all come to me in a, I don't know, metaphysical way, I guess. I mean, I didn't recognize, or I don't think I was fully aware of the spirituality that lies in stones and crystals and everyday things that we may take for granted, but historically they all come from a spiritual place, the trees, the mountains, the ocean, the earth, the air that we breathe. And stones have their own unique power, and each stone has its own energy and can help the human condition and the human psyche. And somehow in my journey, I've just met people who have introduced a lot of Native American things to me, bracelets, rings, all kinds, pictures, portraits, clothes. And it's really kind of interesting because I wouldn't say I go looking for it. I mean, I was born in London and my family are from the Caribbean, so I don't have any kind of direct link with that. But then I found out a few years ago that my family, my grandparents were Caribbean Indian, and they were Native Americans in the Caribbean, and there were only three tribes that survived the Native American Holocaust in the Caribbean before they started the Holocaust on the main land of America, and that was the Maroons and the Arawaks were in Jamaica, and the Caribs that live in Dominica, which is where my parents were born. So I didn't know that, and then suddenly there's all this Native American energy around me while I've been living in America, and they've told me that. So one day I rang my mom and asked her, and she said, yeah, your grandparents were Carib Indians. I was like, huh? And then pictures showed up. I went, oh, those are, because, you know, I never knew my grandparents from my mother's side. They passed before I got to meet them. So, you know, and sometimes your family don't talk about things. They just kind of put things to one side, and you have to ask to find anything out. So I asked one day, and there it was, and there was a picture of my grandmother and pigtails with kind of Native American hair. And there was my grandfather with a pie into the side and a little mustache. And those are my grandparents. And I didn't know that they were Indian. So, yeah, things like that happen and kind of get out of the way and go, okay, there's maybe something else that's trying to share some enlightenment with me. So that's kind of how I've embraced that side of my spirituality and just really, really just got out of the way. And it's things come to me for a reason, or gifts, or people just approach me with little messages, or, I mean, just, and it's not just me, I know it happens to everybody. It's just that I think we look at things and we just think, oh, that was just a coincidence. And when it happens again, we go, oh, that was just a coincidence. And we're trained to think like that. But sometimes if you look beneath that coincidence, you find a connection with something else that's deeper than that, and I did with the whole Native American stuff. So, yeah, it was a real eye-opener for me, and I respect that information coming to me. And it comes from other cultures as well, not just Native American. I get it from African cultures and Caribbean cultures and South American, and I think it's just being open to whatever it is that you feel talks to your spirit. It doesn't have to be any one thing. Be anything, in any language, in any culture, in any color, in any form, and that's how it attracts itself to me. So yeah, that's how, yeah, I kind of connect with it.
And I think because you're so open, like you say, you know, you're just, you're very open to whatever comes, that, you know, all these things come to you, all these beautiful connections, and it just seems so incredibly amazing. But that's the beauty of synchronicity.
Yeah, and you know, sometimes you have to ask yourself, is it my head? Is it my ego? Am I wanting to think this is happening, or am I really experiencing it? Sometimes you're not quite sure how to find a balance of, you know, am I wanting this to happen, so I'm reimagining it, or I'm painting a picture of it, and it's all one big illusion, and this is just my ego talking because I want to connect with this, or is it actually genuinely happening, and you're genuinely connecting with something that's not articulate, but is sense connected, you know, there's a sense to it, smell, touch, taste, whatever. And I think we're always trying to find a balance of, is it my head talking or is it my heart? Because left brain, right brain, it can get confusing sometimes. And there's so much traffic.
Yes.
You try and close,
yes.
you know, whenever somebody says, oh, meditate, you close your eyes and they say, now breathe, and you breathe. And then they go, all right, now just imagine, and they put pictures in your head. But you've got to push all this other traffic out of the way to let those pictures have a placing, and that takes a while to get the traffic to
yes.
stop at the red light.
I understand. So, you know, I never could get into the guided meditation thing. I never could get into that. I don't know why. I don't know. You know, it never appealed to me. But, yeah, I get you on that one for sure.
Yeah, I mean, some people, you know, they meditate very easily and they can go to that mountaintop in the Himalayas and it's all good. But other people, I think they get, I think they get trapped in what they think is spirituality, and it could just be a self-illusion, a self-projection, a self-wanting, a self-something. And that, I think, is always the trick, to find a balance where you're not imagining and having your ego tell you things you need to hear or believe you should hear, but you're actually in a serene, divine moment where you're actually experiencing something that some may call bliss, but it's just something that feels true.
Yeah, I like that. You know, to saying that it's, you know, not bliss but truth. Yeah, I like that. That's an interesting way to look at that.
Well, I think we're told what bliss is so many times. We're told that if we don't do something, then we won't see bliss or we won't find bliss. And I think it's just perspective. You know, you can have a dog and have the dog, you know, come to you and just put their head on your shoulder. And that love, that unconditional love that the pet, dog, cat, bird, whatever, tortoise, rabbit, sparrow gives you, and that can be seen as bliss for some people. Because that's unsaid, there's no dialogue. The dog just wants to tell you that it loves you unconditionally.
Yes.
And that can be
bliss.
Yeah,
and you know what? The thing about meditation is so true, because some people can get into it and some people can't. And I think, you know, you being a very physical number, you're the number 4, so it's, you know, a very grounded, very physical energy. And so, you know, you may approach, you know, that state of bliss or truth or whatever, not going through the meditative route. You know, you could... Yours is a very real, you know, more in the physical sense and not going into that meditative state, you know? You know what I'm saying with that?
Totally.
It's like you're approaching it from a more of a physical perspective rather than a mental perspective.
Yeah, I try. It's a battle. I don't say I get there every day, but I totally do try and work at being that. It's not easy, but I try and use that perspective more and more in my daily experiences rather than get too upset or angry about stuff, because sometimes there's just nothing you can do.
Yes.
It's just today, and there's just nothing you can do, and you can shout and scream and talk and will it away and pray it away and write it away and, you know, protest it away, but it's just not time for it to leave. And it's not about it going today. So today you've got another day looking at it, probing it, examining it, trying to understand it, and it's not ready to be understood on that day. And then a week, 2 weeks, a moment later, suddenly something makes sense, and then suddenly you follow the paper chain and it all makes a weird, stupid, crazy kind of sense. And you can find laughter in it and humor in it. And then when
yes.
you retell it later as an experience to friends and family and whatever, or write it or whatever, you see the humor in it, and it then becomes a joke.
Yes.
And that's how jokes are born. We're just retelling painful stories that we've now stood back with some distance and perspective and gone, oh, I see it now. Now I can tell that same story, but I'll tell it as a joke.
Yes, I understand. Yeah, I've had many of those.
Yeah, and then we as the audience laugh because we go, oh, I know that joke. Yeah, I know what it's like to have bad credit, you know. And everyone goes, oh, I know that joke. And then everybody laughs because they've now connected with something that's familiar to them. And then you want to see that comedian again and again and again, or hear that singer or hear that entertainer or go see that play or go watch that painting or, you know, all different ways, the movie, you know, whatever. And we're always just connecting with things that are familiar and things that we're
yes.
having to remember as well, because we forget to remember.
Yes. Yeah, I absolutely agree. I want to know your take on the 2012 thing. I'm just going to throw that out there. What's your take on this whole, you know, doomsday thing? You know, there's a lot of different perspectives out there on the 2012, but what do you feel about it? What do you feel that it represents?
I don't really give it much thought, to be honest. I just think there have been doomsday moments and doomsday projections when it was doomsday, and then doomsday passed, and then there was another doomsday, and then there was another doomsday. So, I mean, I don't know if doomsday is something that's real, but I just don't see it as something that I can pay any attention to, really. The earth will do what it's always done, its own thing.
Yes. Do you feel, though, that there's some sort of a larger shift going on right now, though? Do you feel that, I guess, humanity is, I guess, ramping up our spiritual evolution at this point in time in history?
I think it's on the constant, to be honest. I think humanity is always revving up its revolution. I think
yes.
We get sidetracked with the politicians who are the decision makers in that revolution, or the inventions that come out, the iPad, the iPhone, the new plane, the new bike, the new TV, the new fad, the new fashion. So we get caught up in the fad of that era, of that decade, but if you look at every decade, it's all evolution. Every decade, you know, every decade takes us to a different place in ourselves, in our technology, in our science, in our understanding, in our communication. Every decade, from zero decade to now, you know, each decade we've got better at becoming more communicative and better at becoming more open and better at becoming more giving. And at the same time, because of those attributes, we've also become better at becoming more greedy, better at becoming more slick, and better at becoming more legal and using thoughts and practices to get things that we want. So we're getting better at everything, and I think we forget that there's a price. And it's the price that we're forgetting that we're paying for. And that's why I started about, you know, when you said, what's my religious belief? It really is, you know, it's knowing that there is a smile and there is a frown. And if you can just find a balance where both breathe in their own space, then that works, I think.
Yes, and I agree with you about the 2012. I agree that we're just, you know, steadily plugging along. However, you know, from a numerological standpoint, and I always have to throw in my 2 cents with the numbers because I'm, you know, a numbers person. In the past 100 years during the 1900s, everyone had a 9 in their birth date, and so 9 is a very ambitious, idealistic, and determined number. And so it was always about money, power, and greed. And the new children coming into the world now have very few 9s and a lot of 2s, and 2 is the number of intuition and sensitivity. So I think there is a bit of a shift away from that egotistical money, power, and greed, and more towards peace and harmony and cooperation. So I do feel that with, you know, children especially, I can feel this new energy coming in. I definitely feel as though there's going to be a shift with the next generation that will be more inclined to be less worried about money and financial and gaining in the material sense.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I totally agree with that. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
I agree with that. I think there's lots of examples of how that's already showing itself with kids.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, you know, my 2 kids are definitely very open. You know, they're not, I try to bribe my 7-year-old to do chores with money, and she doesn't want it. And I'm thinking, when I was her age, I would have loved to have $5 or $10 to do chores, but she, you know, she's not interested in that. So I definitely see the shift for sure. So back to the stones, I'm just curious as to what particular stones are you drawn to? Are there any particular metaphysical stones that you like to use often or wear or keep on you? A lot of people like to know, you know, what stones resonate with certain people. There are a lot of stone people out there.
Well, I'm really bad because I wear the stones and I can never remember what they are. I think right now I like amethyst.
Yes.
And,
I think I saw you with the citrine once on one of the interviews you sent.
Yeah,
yes.
Citrine I wear, and also I wear some kunzite. And what's the other one? What's the clear one?
Clear quartz?
No, aventurine.
Okay, yes.
Aventurine. So I wear aventurine, I wear kunzite, and some turquoise, and then some silver and some gold as well. I just, you know, it alternates. It some wood as well. I wear wood. So
yes.
it alternates to just how I feel and,
mm-hmm.
you know, what I'm connecting with. But wood really is constant, I think. People,
the wood, yes.
What people don't understand, I think people look at wood as just, you know,
Wood.
Wood, yeah, trees.
Yes.
But it shares so much paper and cardboard and pulp and, you know, just music. Most of the music that we love, the spiritual that we adore, that we play in our cars and get married to and have as our special moments of music, all come from wood, violins, guitars.
Wow,
drums.
I didn't think of that, yeah.
So we're constantly playing wood and we're constantly listening to the sound of wood. And I believe that angels live in wood, which is why wood can be transformed into so many different instruments. And those instruments then create the joy that we all enjoy when we listen to Sinatra or Michael Jackson or a rock band, U2 or Bob Marley or, you know, Sade or Jay-Z or whoever, you know. It's all based on the power of wood. And, you know, we see wood and it really does sing. You know, I know people think tree huggers are a little extreme, but if you imagine that the wood's already existing before the violin is cut out of it or the guitar is cut out of it, and it's showing how it's carved and bent and shaped with the strings attached, and different woods create different feelings. Oak has a different feeling to, I don't know, cedar or something, and, you know, they all have different energies and they all sound different. You take a violin, they have different types of wood that create different sounds within the violin, and that's all from the tree. So I think when you look at the tree and you look at the power of the tree and how much the tree is used in our everyday life, not only in how we live and what we eat, the tables, the buildings, you know, what we use wood for, but just the fact that wood is constantly giving to us as a society, as a civilization, in so many things we take for granted. Just look around you and just see how much wood is around you. It will really open your eyes to some things. I've been really trying to share that with people, and it's, you know, from what we wear on our feet to what we... It's wood.
Yes.
Wood.
Well, you know, with the tree, I mean, the tree is kind of symbolic of being grounded, because it's definitely, you know, the symbol of groundedness, because it has the roots that go into the ground. So I'm very fascinated to hear that you are very drawn to the wood in particular, because, like I say, you being that grounded number four, you know, you are drawn to that grounded tree energy, which has the roots going into the ground. And, yeah, I mean, that's, you know, we have a lot of wood around us, which grounds our spiritual energy.
Oh, and it gives us oxygen, and it gives us so much more, you know. Just,
yeah.
It has so many uses, wood, and not just to nature, but to mankind. And I really, I'd like to create a wood day one day, not Woodstock, but a wood day, you know, where we just celebrate, you know, every grounded, standing, precious, regal tree that is around us, especially those trees that have seen all the history of the century, you know, those amazing 400-year-old trees with the roots pouring out of the earth, and you just know that this tree seems so much. And, you know, I think that's what they represent, memory. Trees represent memory to me. Every time I see a tree, I just feel the concept of memory, because you know that tree's seen stuff.
Yes, well, yeah. Yeah, I mean, the energy of anything old, and in particular trees, because they are so grounded and they ground that spiritual energy that, yeah, they can absorb so much, you know, from years and years. Yeah.
And they never die. Even when they turn into furniture, even when they become desks and tables and, you know, you look at old furniture, it's still living, you know. The essence of the wood, be it through an instrument or through furniture or whatever it is, it still somehow has a way of living and showing its glory. Even if your car is wood paneled, it's still living somehow. Just the texture of it, the touch of it, the sense of it. So
the energy,
anyway.
Yeah, I understand. No, you can feel the energy. Yeah, definitely. I mean, a desk or what have you, you can still feel the energy of the wood. Yeah, I totally believe that. Yeah, I was going to say, I have a question from the chat room. Someone has asked a question to you. Jilly 2009 has asked if you believe in fairies. She was just talking about that children like to play with wood or make fairy houses out of trees and things like that, and she wanted to know if you believe in fairies.
In fairies?
Yes.
In fairies?
You had mentioned the angels, so I'm just curious as to know if you...
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I think fairies exist, and I think some of the myths that we have around fairies and the stories that we've told are based on dreams or imaginings or true life experiences that people have all put down on the page, and they've become folklore and myth and fable, and then they've become part of our consciousness. And, yeah, mm-hmm. I totally believe in, you know, the Tinkerbell aspect of what we have around us and what guides us and protects us. So fairies, yeah, rock on. We need them.
And we can call on them.
You know, I've been told that we can call on them. Anytime mm-hmm. we feel depressed or in traffic or we need a parking space or we need a bank to, you know, just leave us alone and stuff, I've heard that we can always call on fairies and they'll show up in some form. They're the ones that, you know, remind you of where you put things you thought you lost.
Yes. Well, I believe, I mean, if we believe in anything, I mean, it's real, right? So it's just a matter, like you say, of perspective for sure. It's interesting you were talking about angels being in the wood because four, as I was saying, that you're a four, and four is the angel number. So I just find all of these little connections interesting that you were mentioning about the angels. Yeah, four is definitely the angel number. If you see 444 as a sequence, it's usually the angel speaking to you, or so they say. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to know about this year in particular for you. I don't know if this is a little bit too personal for you to talk about, but I know in a couple of conversations we have had that you'd mentioned this year in particular has been a very self-reflective year for you. Could you tell us a little bit about that and how the year has been going so far for you?
How's the year gone for me? It's been an interesting year, I think. It's been challenging in some respects, but I think I think it's because for a very long time I've accepted the balance of the comedy and tragedy in life, the comedy and tragedy face that they use as a mask sometimes in theater. And it's really tough sometimes because you don't know if the comedy is supposed to be timely or if the tragedy is supposed to be timely. But if it happens on that day and you happen to be in that spot when it hits, good, indifferent, funny or bad, you just got to embrace what it is. And you can't take the comedy too seriously and you can't take the tragedy too seriously. So I try and live through a balance of both. And it's tough sometimes because, you know, it's just tough. But I try and stay as honest as I can with my feelings and with the judgments and the projections that I put around me and constantly work at just being fair to myself. That's why I said earlier about what I believe we start from.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to be fair. If you're fair to yourself, you'll be fair to everything else. You know, you might give that ant a day off and you won't squash it. You might open the window and let the fly out, you know. You might not squash that bee. You might not, you know, run that red light. You might give up that parking space. You might let that person in line, you know. You might see something in them that lets you go, all right, you know what, I can put them in front of me, it's okay. You know, you just surrender to something else. And I think if you can do that as often as you can, then you just rid yourself of feeling tense and frustrated when really there's not much you can do until it's ready to happen. And you can keep working on yourself and working on spirituality and meditation and spiritual practices and so on. You can keep doing that for sure. But it's not going to happen until it's ready. And I've realized more and more that we never seem to get what we want, but we always attain what we need. And if we remember that even if we got that ice cream and wanted that flavor, okay, that flavor wasn't available, but it is in this flavor. We're still getting the ice cream. We're still getting a hit of the ice cream. And we may discover something wonderful and go, oh, I've never tried this flavor. This is fun. Or we might go, yeah, and spit that flavor out. But either way, you know, we're getting ice cream.
Yes. So this year in particular, though, you've been really taking time for family and just having some downtime, kind of regrouping and just, I guess, very self-reflective, like I say.
Yeah, okay, sleep more, go to bed, don't fight, catch up with that movie, or read that book, go see that artwork, or go catch that concert, or make time, they've just had a baby, go see them. You know, just normal everyday things that everyday people do, but just making an effort, more of an effort, so that work doesn't interfere with it as much as it did. And just making an effort to know that these things are important as anything else, that you stay in touch with family and friends and keep updated with changes in their lives as well, just as there are changes in yours. So I've tried to do that more this year, I think, and just been a little less hard on myself with things I think I should do or things I expect I should be doing, because, like I said, I just think it happens when it's ready. And as long as you've felt that you put the groundwork in and you've worked hard and you're still working in your own way to make it happen, you've got to trust that what you're doing is enough.
Yes, and I think, you know, you're really in tune with the energy because, you know, there are a lot of people who just push all the time, and they, you know, they get frustrated and they hit a lot of brick walls and they can't understand why things aren't working out. And it seems like you're very in tune with when you need to rest and when it's okay to push for change and to, you know, go full steam ahead. Because this year in particular, and we've talked about this before, is that this year for you is a personal year of four, which is very much about rest and relaxation and consolidation. And so I think you're very much in tune with the energy around you and what you should be doing.
Well,
because there are times for rest and there are times for change, and so people need to recognize that.
Right. Yeah, I'm working at getting better at that.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely. Without doubt.
Yeah. Yeah, and that comes with age, obviously, too, right?
Yeah.
The older you get, the more,
Absolutely. And, you know, you start to respect the body more and things that, you know, you may have not taken for granted. You know, you start to accept that, you know, everything has its... It's just accepting everything has its place. Everything has its place. And, you know, we live in so much judgment about what we should do and where we should be and what we should become and what we should have been by now and, oh, we're not that, so now we've failed. And there's so much failure. You know, the pressure of failure is so intense around us all the time that if you don't achieve that, then the child feels failure, and then the parent feels failure, and then the siblings feel failure, and then the team feels, and, you know, the idea of failure is so heavy now that you're not given permission to fail and still feel okay about it. It's like fail and, you know, that's it. And I think lots of people I know have lost their homes because of the, you know, economic situation, and a lot of people I know are in pain. And I just think that people are just trying to find a way to deal with their suffering in a way that doesn't create so much pain. And I think that's what we're all trying to avoid, the suffering. But I don't think we can avoid it, you know. I just think it's necessary.
Yes, yeah. I believe so. I think, you know, if we didn't have any challenges in life, we wouldn't grow. You know, there wouldn't be any need for us to be here, right? And I know a lot of people, you know, think that life should be all about bliss and that's it. But really, we're in the physical plane, and, you know, we need to experience challenges. Otherwise, we'll never evolve.
Right. I agree.
Okay, Trevor, I'd like to shift gears and just talk a little bit about the films that you'd like to produce. I know you have a couple of scripts that you've written that you would like to produce in the future, and I really think that they're fitting for the show because they're so raw and they're so full of truth. I think they have really powerful messages behind them, and I want you to just talk a little bit about them and what they're about.
Well, I've written a script called A Million Hours of Love, and I guess it just goes through a million hours between a couple who are going through all the different experiences that couples go through. But I guess I'm trying to use a real truth in the fact that it's based on senses and smells and tastes and visions and illusions and things that people have to buy into if you're going to fall in love and accept and be with someone for the rest of your life when you say, I do, if it gets to that point where you actually do want to marry each other. But, you know, big teeth, big nose, big eyes, you know, big hands, big feet, body odor, bad breath, you know, bad skin. I mean, all these are things that we have to look at each other at then decide if this is the person that we want to be with, and then embrace that, and then it doesn't become a problem. Because I think if we're not satisfied and we jump into a relationship and we haven't really worked out as much as we can about why we want to be with this person that we claim to love, and then later we go, oh, you know, I always knew that, but I never wanted to say it, then we've kind of self-saboteured our own destiny as well by accepting something that we knew we didn't want. So the idea of the movie is looking at the things that could be things that we look at, that we say are acceptable, and later we decide we don't want. You know, because we do want someone with smaller hips, so we do want someone with, you know, a nicer voice. And, you know, if you're married to a man who's got a deep voice and hairy hands, or a woman who's got a high voice and, you know, kind of, you know, big feet, you know, these are things that you've got to just, all right, I love this person, I love this woman, I love this man, and let's roll. But, you know, we don't look at these things. You know, the movies tend to portray a very romantic, perfect boy meets girl, and suddenly everything just seems to click. Well, in real life, relationships take time, and getting to know someone and like someone and accept someone for all their goods and bads takes time. And, you know, you think about relationships, the smallest things blow up into the biggest rows. And when you're sober from them, you go, why did we argue about who left this there and why you left that there and who left the toilet seat up and why didn't you put the toilet seat down and why did you leave the light on in the bathroom? I mean, just really stupid stuff. But we take it so seriously, and it becomes loaded with all the other stuff we wanted to say. And then suddenly it all comes out in this tirade of stuff. And the other person saying, I didn't know you were going there, or you felt like this, or you had all this going on. And just the idea of your toenails in bed scratching, and that blew up all the stuff about what you don't do and what you should be doing and how unsatisfied the other partner is. And so that's the idea of the movie, basically, to really take these little taboo hand grenades, emotional hand grenades, and blow them up into scenes that tell a story about a couple in a time and space where there's lots of humor and just the things we don't want to talk about, the taboo things that we don't think are necessary in a relationship. I want to explore them in a movie with two people.
I love that. I really love that concept because it's so real, you know? It's just, it's nothing like I've seen yet, and I think it really needs to be done. You know, I really think that. Yeah, definitely. So what's it called? What's the script?
It's called A Million Hours of Love.
A Million Hours, okay, yes. Okay, I just want to put out there, too.
I'm not putting a price or a color on love. I'm just saying that, you know, love comes in all colors, all shapes, all sizes, all moods, all emotions. And who are we to judge it as good or bad just because from where we stand on our side of the fence, that relationship doesn't look like it's working. It's working in a different way for different reasons. And it will stop working when those reasons and those ways no longer function for either party. But while they do function, that's called love.
Yes. Yeah, fantastic. I have a couple of people here in the chat room that are loving the idea of your script. They're saying, what a great premises for a screenplay. They said there have been other attempts at this type of thing, but they've been done poorly, and they really like your idea. I think it'll be well received for sure. I want to put out there, too, that we're going to be taking callers. If anyone would like to call in, Trevor's more than willing to speak with you. The call-in number is 1-877-296-0345. So Trevor and I will continue talking, and if someone would like to call in, we'll definitely be ready to take your call. So Trevor, I'd like to talk about the other film you mentioned to me, or the other script that you have. Was it, I don't remember the name, but it was about what happens to prostitutes other people in that.
Oh, yeah, that's another story I've written.
That is very...
Pimps and prostitutes and what they do when they retire.
Yeah, that's really raw.
Yeah, that's different. That's very different from the... Well, I'm just trying to say basically that I think, you know, we've been looking at certain people in society and their lifestyles, and we can all make judgments on what people are and what people do, but we don't really know until we really look at what people become. Because we forget that, you know, what we are today is not what we are today. It's really what we're becoming. So if you suddenly decide that you're not going to smoke today, in a year or two or 6 months, whatever, you'll then become a non-smoker.
Yes.
And you were a smoker 3 days ago, and 3 days later, you're now a non-smoker. You've become something else. And the job then is to stick to that and find a way to get through that so you navigate success. Well, that's how I see life. We're always becoming things. So I can't judge you on what you were or what you did. I've got to judge you on what I see in front of me, which is about what you're becoming and what you want to become and what you are aiming to become. So the idea of taking retired pimps and prostitutes and playing with that story was really interesting to me because I think we're always trying to become something else than what we have become. You know, we give up our dreams and we become successful selling cars or becoming writers or becoming, you know, salesmen of sorts, and maybe we wanted to just play sports or go climb the Himalayas or go swim with dolphins, and we never achieved that. So it's the idea is it's about regret from an age group that can really reflect that and look at what they chose to do with their life and choices and put it in a genre that's still funny and comedic and interesting, and there's some drama attached to it. But the theme is really about how people survive the choice that they thought was freedom.
Yes. Yeah, I think that is such a powerful idea because, you know, these are things, you know, these two scripts that you're talking about that no one ever really thinks about. You know, they go to the movies, they watch these generic shows that are about the same old thing we've been watching for the past 20 years. And these things are so in your face and they uncover something that no one's ever done before. So I really, you know, I think they would be so well received. I hope that you get a chance to do them because, you know, they definitely need to be out there.
Thank you. Well, that's the plan.
Yes.
That's what I'm working on.
Yes, it is.
That's what I'm working on becoming.
Yes. So at the moment, I noticed on your bio, too, you're working on a movie called Tick. What is that about? Is that a play or is that a film or what's about?
That's a movie that I did last year that had a screening earlier this year, and I think they're trying to find some distribution for it. It's kind of like a thriller.
Okay, yes.
All shot in L.A. And I think it's still doing some of the festivals around. Not sure where exactly it's gone to, but or where it's going to. But I know it did, it's done a couple of festivals already. I think it did one in Nashville, and it did one in L.A. as well. So, you know, it's getting some good reviews. So, you know, fingers crossed something will come from it. Bad, different, you know, hopefully something good. So.
Well, definitely. I mean, I think you should be, you know, pushing for these other things for sure because they're definitely not your mainstream stuff. So the other question I have for you too, Trevor, is, how do you see yourself evolving? Where do you see yourself going with, you know, your work, your life, everything? Where do you see yourself evolving towards? What kind of big picture could you give me for yourself? That's a tough question, eh?
Wow. That is a big question. Oh my God, how do you answer that? I don't know. I mean, there's lots of dreams that I'm still working on truly fulfilling, dreams I'm totally committed to. And I'd like to be in a place, I guess, where I could share in a different form of people education or of people entertainment. I'm from England, and my family are from the Caribbean, and there's a gold mine of stories that come from my background as a European of color, and of all Europeans of color who serve in that Elizabethan, Victorian, Darwinian, Dickensian era and story and history of England and Europe. And Europe is so full of different tales and I'd like to be able to be part of a movement of artists that bring some of those wonderful stories and creativity and art to a wider audience of folks so that they can see that there's a new, and always has been, a European, I feel, that's maybe been ignored or not seen in the way that would create a wider awareness. So I'm of that community as a European, and I'd like to contribute to something that brings that audience to the table, to share in the laughter, the joy, the woes, the drama, the disappointments, all the good things that we have in all good stories, but just seen from different perspectives. And Europe is really amazing. You think of all the countries and all the languages and all the people that live there and all the many stories that could be told about people who look just like other people.
Yes. Well, you know, it's interesting you say, telling stories of, the people of color, because I know, from the stories that I hear of England and Europe in general is that, it's very, I guess, based on class or based on status, much more so than even the U.S. is. So I can only imagine being a person of color and trying to make it somewhat of a life in Europe. It would be tough, for sure.
Yeah, and, it's not even for me, it's not really, I don't even see it as an obstacle or a challenge because, the mere fact that, people exist and, we're having this conversation is enough evidence that there's something that I can share. So
yes.
I have no doubt that at some point the world won't look at that whole territory and go, oh, wow, look at this. Because so much in Germany, so much in France, so much in Italy, so much in Spain, all speaking the languages, England, all speaking the languages, all different, stories. And you could find Will Smiths and Bonos and Angelina Jolie's and Brad Pitt's and so many different types of musicians and Lady Gaga's and Madonna's and Beyonce's. There's just, if you look at it as a continent and you look at the world as a world that is giving to every human spirit, well, that means that everything can be duplicated in different places with lesser or greater skills, but skills that should be seen, recognized, acknowledged, awarded, applauded, given confidence to. And when you give people confidence, well, whatever they're doing, not just in the world of entertainment, but just in anything, you then vibrate just good vibes. And that can only be good vibes all around for anyone that you're making feel good. If you say to someone, you're really good at that, and I really enjoyed how you used your talent, it served me in some way, that person feels great. So it's just about creating more of that and broadening the net so that we have the internet now, so really we have too much information at our disposal. So that's a good thing and a bad thing, but it's there. So we just have to embrace that and make use of it in a way that can help serve and widen this idea. So I think, things are always changing. That's the one thing that we know we can depend on in life. Even if we don't like what's going on around us in our lives, we always know that things are changing. Every day is a different day. So
yes,
I think
I agree.
Have to hold on to that. Hold on to the fact that, even if you get a no today, you could get a yes tomorrow. And it's just, how can you hang on to knowing that a yes is coming when you're unemployed and you've got no money and you've got no food and you've got no this and you've got no that and you don't know how you're paying the rent and the bills and the kids and the car payments and the credit card and just all these things pulling at you going, let me in, let me in. And there you are trying to really stand strong in your truth and not get worn away by it. It's really tough. But, we do it. We all have the capacity to do it, and we don't pat ourselves on the shoulder enough, I think. But if you look around you and you look at people who are really making things work at the greatest odds, you just got to give them a hug, applaud them, let them know, kiss them, give them a card, flowers, a case of beer.
You are so pure of heart. You're so inspiring, honestly. I think that is what really took me aback when I met you, was that, we all have this image of what a celebrity is or what, someone from Hollywood or has been in any kind of show or film, that they're, you know, they're not spiritual in the least, but you really turn that image on its head. You know, you really, it's just really, I guess, inspiring to hear that there are good people everywhere. You know, there are good people
everywhere.
In all.
And I'm not saying, you know, by all means, and I don't want any of your listeners to think, oh, you know, God, isn't he wholesome? I mean, I make mistakes. I step in things I shouldn't step in. I do all the good and
you're
the
human.
Bad, and
yeah.
I'm human, you know, and
that's right.
I have to learn some things every day that I say and do. But, you know, once it's said or once it's done, I can't beat myself up and live with guilt and balance a kind of guilty loving of myself, because now I can't love myself because I feel guilty. Well, I can feel the responsible side of myself, knowing that I've made a choice to receive this information in a certain way, and I can perceive it in a negative or a positive or both. And then what do I do with that knowledge? Well, I need to just move on from it. Because if I keep it in my way, it stands in my way, then it interrupts everything good or bad that's coming to me, and then I focus on it, and before I know it, 10 years has gone by, and I haven't got over it.
Oh dear, I think we've lost Trevor. Oh my goodness. Okay, just hang on a minute. I think he'll probably call back. So we've lost him here. Oh, he's not calling back yet. I'm going to take a caller and just have a talk with someone and see what... Hi, who do I have on the line?
Jill?
Oh, hi, Jill.
Hi.
I've kind of lost Trevor, so I'm waiting for him to call back in. Hopefully he will. I've had this happen before with the California connection, I think, because we're so far away.
Or possibly the storm, too.
It could be. I don't know. Yeah, I lost a guest before like this. And it was California. So he had mentioned before we came on air that the lines are a bit shaky in California sometimes. So hopefully he'll call back in. Was
okay.
There a question you had for him or a comment?
I do.
Yes?
Because I met with Noah's school today to take in all the tests and so on. Yeah. I'm definitely, like Noah told me, he said, you don't support me. So I thought about that a lot over the summer, and I thought, you know, I don't. I'm listening to what the school tells me. So I met with them, and I realized something driving back to work today, that Noah is very in tune with everything, the angels, his Bubba, everybody and everything, until he gets to school. Now, even though he goes to the workshops, and even though it's something that I practice at home, and he practices at home, and he plays with his crystals and does healing on my headaches, once he's back at school, it's almost as though the reality comes back in for him as being reality, that everything that he believes in is just his imagination. In fact, he said that today when we were talking about how I got him the teacher he wanted and the new principal seemed good. And then when he started talking about the fairies again, he said, but that's just my imagination, Mommy, right? And I said, no, what makes you think that? And he said, well, I know when we talk about this stuff in school, the teacher gets a little upset with me. And now how do I bypass that no matter what I do at home? Many of his peers and teachers don't embrace it at school.
I think I've got Trevor back on. Trevor, are you there? Oh, I lost him again.
Okay.
He was there, actually.
I thought I heard something.
Oh. Yeah, he was on there, but yeah. Hmm. Interesting. Yeah, and we're 5 minutes.
Battle.
Pardon?
I'm finding a battle. I'm finding... Yeah. Now we're getting back into the society rituals again, that once again, as he gets older, he's remembering less.
Yes.
And he's not believing in what he believes in as much.
Yes, and he's getting those negative patterns from other people. Yeah.
Yeah.
I understand. Yeah, and it's so hard because that's the age when we start to get those negative patterns. You know, I just did a workshop on Tuesday evening, and it was about, you know, getting rid of those patterns that we've developed for all those years and getting back to being that child that believes they can do anything and believes in anything. You know, we need to get back to that place and program our own beliefs instead of, you know, believing what our teachers say or what, you know, other adults have been, or other children, you know, have been feeding us.
Well, it's interesting because when I was there getting my Reiki last weekend, there was a woman there, and she came up to me, and she introduced herself because she said that your son was just, because Noah always takes his healing kit with him, and Terry teaches him a new healing technique, and she said that your son was just telling me about his kit. My son has the same one. He's 12 now. They're older, or he's older than Noah, but she said, could they be friends? And I said, well, not a problem. So she told me where they lived, and they had a horse farm, and she's a spiritual guide, and I said, well, what's the problem? And she said, the problem is at 12, you know, he doesn't play with his crystals all the time, but even if he talks about it just once, it's almost like he's isolating himself from his friends through the parents. So
okay,
she was looking
for a playmate. I think we have Trevor back on. Trevor, are you there?
Okay.
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Okay, great. Okay, we have 4 minutes left, so Jill has a quick question for you. Her son's having a bit of a time at school and just in life in general with being himself, and, you know, he's getting a lot of information from other people, you know, telling him he shouldn't believe in this or, you know, what he's seeing is crazy and all those things. Do you have any advice for Jill, for her son, and how she can allow him to continue just living his truth or being, you know, who he is?
How old is he?
7.
Wow.
He swears he believes in angels. He swears his Bubba comes to see him at night when he's sad and that the fairies are there. And it's other children, too. I'm finding little tiny networks scattered throughout Ontario or at least my network, that are having the same problem maintaining friendships through the parents and through the teachers.
You know, it's tricky because, you know, you want to protect him and you don't want him to get hurt in any way. But in a way, if he's already feeling the need to express it, bless his heart, he doesn't fully understand how people are going to perceive that, but in a way you have to let him let him be. Because if you try to change what he organically, you know what I was saying about what he's becoming?
Right.
Like, you know, I know you're totally justified in wanting to protect him, but at the same time, what will be the price if you stop him from saying what he's saying? And if he totally does believe that he sees this and feels these things, and you stop him from feeling that, what's the price of that later?
Oh, it's already happening now. The price that he shuts down now with me. He's disconnected a little bit.
Is that because you won't share it? Is that because you
won't share it with you? He's stopping to share it because he doesn't do this all the time in play dates. It's when he brings out his healing kit, and it does work, by the way. He'll get rid of my headache in a minute with his crystals. You know, he wants to be a doctor of crystals. And but he's known this since he was really little. Like, not crystals, but he knew something. So he used to tell me, he saw my father a week after he passed away and said, Mommy, old man, and I couldn't find anybody, but he knew. So I don't want to isolate him, and I don't, but he's starting to disconnect from me a little bit since he's already been told, no, you have to stop fabricating stories.
I have to interrupt you guys. I'm sorry about this, but we have 1 minute left, and I just want to wrap up things, definitely. But, Jill, you know what? I'll give you some quick advice. I think for your son, what you should be doing is just, you know, helping him get confidence in just being him. You know, when he comes home and is upset that, you know, someone said this and, you know, didn't believe me or what have you, just, you know, reaffirm that this is your truth and this is what, you know, he should be believing in. So,
okay.
You know, just keep reaffirming that for sure. So I wanted to thank you, Trevor, for being on. It was a great show. You know, we've learned a lot. You're very open and spiritual, definitely. You know, it was beautiful to hear, you know, that side of Hollywood, I guess you could say. So thanks again. And
thank you,
Joe.
And I want to say, Joe, I pray that, you know, he does find his own way of just getting through this. He's 7 years old, so a lot of things are new to him. And you just have to, I know it's hard for you, but you kind of just have to let him get it out of him in order to
just
find...
Just let him muddle through.
Yeah, I think so, sweetheart. I know it's going to be a little tough, but he's going to be okay if you let him expand who he wants to be. If you shut him down, you might shut down other qualities that won't come out again.
Okay. Thanks so much.
Oh, thank you, Joe.
Bless him. Bless you.
So thank you, Trevor. I've got to cut you off here. I'm so sorry, but I've got to introduce the next show. Definitely, we'll be speaking. Definitely. Thank you, Trevor.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Okay, next episode, we're going to have Marie Jones. She's the best-selling author of 2013, End of Days, or New Beginning. She's also the author of 1111, The Time Prompt Phenomenon. So she's definitely coming on to share. her information about this book and also her new book called The Secret Trinity. So I'm very excited about that. So definitely tune in next week and have a great evening, folks, and thanks for listening.